Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Hi, diehards. Welcome back to Sell or Die. It's Wednesday, and today and for the next few weeks, we are going to have a special edition of Sell or Die, where I interview my co-host, Jeffrey Gittimer. He's going to be talking about the first writings of Napoleon Hill, Truthful Living. It's a book for those of you who are living under a rock. Go get it. Go pre-order it on Amazon. It'll get directly to your house on October 30th. The link's in the show notes, guys. If you didn't go get it yet, what are you waiting for? This book is life-changing, it's life-altering, and I am so excited to interview Jeffrey because he's going to provide inspiration, he's going to provide ideas and strategies you can use to change your life. Get excited, get ready, it's time to sell or die. So this is really exciting because it's not every day a co-host of Sell or Die gets to interview the other co-host.
Oh, is that what we're doing today?
That's what we're doing.
And what is this interview all about?
We're going to talk about your book, The First Writings of Napoleon Hill, Truthful Living.
Cool.
And it's the foreword and actions and annotations are by you, Mr. Jeffrey Gittimer.
Whoa. But what a guy.
Before we get into the book, Jeffrey, for those of us diehards who are out there thinking, okay, Jeffrey wrote a book with Napoleon Hill, or Napoleon Hill wrote this book and Jeffrey's name is on it, and they don't even know who Napoleon Hill is, I'd like to start there. So, Jeffrey, who was Napoleon Hill?
Napoleon Hill was, and probably still is, the father of personal development and positive attitude. Most people know him by his magnum opus, Think and Grow Rich, which was published in 1937 and has sold purportedly about 100 million copies. And even if they're wrong, it's 90 million copies.
So how much does the average book sell? How many copies?
Oh, about 10,000 in its lifetime.
Ah, so 90 million or 100 million is pretty insane.
I would say that it is the most purchased book in the history of personal development, period. More than How to Win Friends and Influence People, more than any other, The Power of Positive Thinking, anything that's been written in that genre, Napoleon Hill dwarfs other book sales. And in languages, it's all over the world. I don't know how many languages, but 40, maybe 50 languages. It's incredibly well done. And as you know, we're going to be going to the International Book Fair or the International Book Expo, where publishers from all over the world seek Napoleon Hill's writings.
Mm-hmm. And so the first writing seems like they should have come out first.
Well, they should have, but they were lost. Napoleon Hill wrote his own stuff. He was the owner and the chief executive and the dean of the George Washington Institute in Chicago in 1917, where he wrote all the courseware for a course that was entitled Truthful Advertising. And when the Napoleon Hill Institute found these documents about 5 years ago, they called me on the phone and said, would you like to – because it's always about selling, so they called me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read them, I said, no, wait, we're taking out the selling, because in the back of each lesson, which was called an after-the-lesson visit with Mr. Hill, he had written – the preamble to Think and Grow Rich. He actually created personal development courseware because he knew that in order for these students to learn anything about selling, they had to feel good about themselves. They had to be self-confident. They had to have desire. They had to have a goal. That, you know, whatever the circumstances were, he wrote about something every single lesson, and there's 23 of them. So I was fortunate enough to gain access to them, was given the opportunity to edit and annotate, which I did, And I have written, Napoleon Hill has written the first effort to create a masterpiece of personal development and positive attitudes. It's an absolutely incredible book.
That's great. And so this is all amazing. I mean, these writings were lost to the world until now.
Mm-hmm.
Napoleon Hill Foundation finds the writings.
Yep.
And they call you.
Yep.
No offense, but why you?
Right. I have been donating my services to the Napoleon Hill Foundation. We write every week. We create the Napoleon Hill newsletter yesterday and today, and I do it for no charge. I don't charge the foundation any money because Napoleon Hill gave me my positive attitude. So to give back, been doing this for almost 15 years now. So they thought I was the natural fit for this since I wasn't the money grubber. And, you know, that so many people call big companies or big foundations and say, I can make you a lot of money if you'll just give me a lot of your money. And so I have chosen the path of no money, which usually freaks people out. Like they're looking around to see what the deal is. But mm-hmm. after 15 years, you've kind of earned your stripes. So I gladly took this honor. It took me 2 years to create everything. And to acknowledge you, a great editing job of making this happen. So you're pretty familiar with the book as well. And then I got to read the book to the Audible, to the Brilliance people. And I'm blown away by it every day.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in this book that anybody can take, pick up and take any minute of any day. And so I've developed this formula, by the way, for reading the book. Purchase the book. Go to Amazon, just buy it. And Kindle, buy it. Brilliance, buy it. Or buy it. On October the 30th, it'll be delivered. And first thing you do is read all the full-page quotes.
Mm.
That will give you an opportunity to understand what's inside. Then read the whole book one time. And you don't have to do anything. Maybe take some yellow highlighters and highlight the book. And then when you've done all of that, then start to study the book. I've given you an implementation plan for each chapter so you can figure out how to put it into your life. But I think most importantly, I want you to make certain that you understand that this is not a one-read book. This is a life-altering book, and you can't alter your life with one reading.
So I totally agree with that because upon editing the book, I read it about 10 times in a couple of matter of months. And every time I read it, I picked up at least one or two things new that I hadn't even thought about the first time reading it. So I hear what you're saying. But I want to go back to something you just said before we even get into the book, which is Napoleon Hill gave you your positive attitude. Did you know Napoleon Hill? How did he give you a positive attitude?
No, I was exposed to a group of people in a network marketing company in 1972. We had a four-hour sales meeting every morning from 8 a.m. until noon every single day for a year. And during that time, everybody had to listen to The Strangest Secret every day. They had to watch Challenge to America, the movie by the great Glenn W. Turner, and report on one chapter of Think and Grow Rich. Now, the book only has 15 chapters, so we were going through the book, 5-day work week. We were going through the book about 1.25 times every month.
Mm.
So when I say 10 times that I've read this book, it's really an underestimate. I've really read it more than a dozen times, but I don't want to exaggerate a number. But after about the third reading, I got it. And I realized that if I hadn't repeated it, I would have counted it as a book that I read and set to the side and, oh, yeah, it's great. But once you do something repetitively, it starts to sink in. So things like desire and concentration and a definite major aim and self-confidence, those things become part of your fabric, not just something that you've read.
Cool. And so how is this new book, The First Writings of Napoleon Hill, Truthful Living, different than Think and Grow Rich. If I'm a Think and Grow Rich devotee and I've read it and I love it and I live by it and it's already changed my life, why should I go buy the new one, which is really the old one?
Well, it's not. Napoleon Hill hand typed out each one of these lessons. So there's no corrections. And I've seen the original documents. He didn't even go back and do a whiteout. He just wrote it from stream of conscious. So this is the original, unedited. What do they say in the guitar world? It's when you're playing without
unfiltered.
No.
Unstrung?
No. What's the word, Nada? Yeah. So this is what? But they call it something.
A jam session?
No. It's the name of a fish. What are they? Unplugged.
Okay.
This is Napoleon Hill unplugged. He's writing from a stream of conscious. These are his original thoughts about personal development and positive attitude and wealth seekers. And he puts it down once a week for the class. He didn't mean this for the world. He meant this for the kids that were in the school or the students that were in the school. And it was very personal. It was very instructional. And there's things in here that people are going to read this and go, okay, I know that. Great. You know what? I know you know it. The question is, how good are you at it? Mm-hmm. And when he starts out by the first chapter is success is up to you. Now, how much more of a challenge can that possibly be? Because what he's saying there is stop blaming other people for what happens to you. Start concentrating on what you can do, not what you can't do, and be positive about it and put yourself in a position where you believe that you can do it. And that's where the book starts. And then he goes on to make a major revelation where he says, finish what you start. Okay, well, and you know what? You know, anyone who's listening out there right now, any diehard, anyone they pass this on to, you know you got to finish what you start. But I'll bet if I go to your house, I can find at least 20 projects that you started that you never finished.
Mm-hmm.
20 ideas that you had that you never cashed in on. 20 things that you're supposed to do even in your own garage that you haven't done. So finish what you start. And then he presents a game plan so you can understand how to finish what you start. So this is – it's not just a book that lectures you. It's a book that actually shares the how-to with you. And because it was written 100 years ago, 1917, at the end of every chapter, I tell you how to put it into your life in today's world. So I give you an introduction to each chapter. I annotate a few things in there while you're reading, and then I give you an instructional game plan when you're finished without changing any words of Napoleon Hill. I didn't change one word of his. I didn't take anything out of context. If there's anything you can't understand because the lexicon was much different in 1917 than it is right now, it's original writings, 100% pure.
And so what are some of the biggest personal revelations that you had when reading the book?
What I found is that while you know many of the single words that Hill is talking about, what he challenged me with was combining them, the power of the combination of some of those words. So, for example, when he talks about the five most important words in the English language, imagination, desire, enthusiasm, self-confidence, and concentration, you may have great imagination, but no desire to go along with it. You may have desire, but no enthusiasm to go with it. You may have desire and enthusiasm, but no self-confidence to make it happen. And concentration for Napoleon Hill was the glue word. If there's a chapter in here called The Magic Key, and the magic key is concentration, he wrote a whole book on it in the 40s called The Magic Key. And what you have to understand here is that the power in this book is not simply one thing. It's everything. He tells you how to make that definite major aim, how to make that one goal, and then he gives you all the criteria for making it happen in your life. So this is – when I say it's life-altering, I don't want to say it's life-changing because nothing in here is going to go, oh, my God, concentration, I never heard of that. But if you will take the power and the wisdom in this book and combine the elements that he's talking about, then you can win.
So is there something that you've altered in your life or changed in your life after reading this book?
Yeah, there definitely has been. I am much more focused in what I'm looking at. I'm much more concentrated in what I'm doing, and I'm spending more time productively. If you recall, in our personal lives, you had challenged me to stop playing games on my phone.
Oh, I recall.
So I've stopped now for about 4 months or so. Mm-hmm. And now every time, I don't even have the games on my phone to where I can look at them and be tempted to play them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no siren on my phone. If you focus inward, if you focus on yourself, if you concentrate on yourself, you will be forced to have the desire to do it. You'll be forced to have the enthusiasm about it. You'll be forced to have the self-confidence about it, and you'll imagine new things. So those powers are now combined with me that I didn't really understand why I wasn't putting them all together before I read the book.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah.
So are there any chapters that you were surprised about in the book?
Yeah, there were a couple. I can go into a couple of them. I think they were actually pretty cool. Lesson 11 – they're not called chapters, by the way. They're called lessons. Mm-hmm. Lesson 11 is called The Law of Harmonious Attraction. And I thought, wait a minute. What's the law of attraction all by itself? And the law of attraction all by itself has been bastardized over the course of the last three decades to a point where some people say, well, just think it. And some people, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to talk about it. I've renamed it the law of value attraction. So I value out and become attraction. But Hill goes even deeper. He says, look, hang out with people that you're harmonious with. Write things that you believe in that you can be harmonious with. And all of a sudden, those that are like-minded will automatically come to you. He later called it a mastermind. And that was this one of the deep, dark secrets in this process where he kind of ferrets it out. He starts out with harmonious attraction and says, wait, I have all these people. They're brilliant people. They are helping one another and helping themselves, and he created the mastermind. And that, to me, was my personal biggest aha, and among 100 other ahas, but that was the biggest one.
So a lot of books on success or personal development teach you what you need to do, specifically you as the person seeking success, but they don't usually go into who you need to hang out with for the mastermind. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
In lesson number 16.
Excuse me for interrupting. Why would I try to go it by myself when I know a ton of people that have already become successful?
Mm-hmm.
I can just have breakfast with them, which you know we do. And we bring people over to our home and talk to them about how they've achieved. I'm going to have lunch with one today. And I cannot say enough about the power of combining your intelligence with other people that have already achieved.
That's cool. So in lesson number 16, Hill talks, it's called Who is Behind Your Success?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a surprising chapter to you? Because I was personally very surprised to see in a personal development book, this is no longer just about you.
Right.
It's way more than that.
Well, Hill talked about the people that were behind his success.
Mm-hmm.
And he thanks a lot of people. He's very humble about it. Family things and people that he was introduced to. But I think more importantly, it's about me and you and any reader and who helped them. Mm-hmm. Was it your dad or your mom? Was it somebody where you worked first? Was it a teacher in college? Was it a high school teacher that gave you? You know, I looked at my own stuff and I went and did some – I was very retrospective with this, where I tried to actually remember what had happened. So I remember my English English composition teacher in college, and I remember my English grammar teachers in high school, and those were very important people to me, but I didn't know it at the time. All I did was I studied the lessons and I did well at them, and 50 years later, boom, I'm a writer, and that – well, it's actually 40 years later, boom, I'm a writer, but – I put them into perspective and took them for granted until I finally realized, oh, my gosh, this was a turning point.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, who's behind your success? Not only do you have to know who it was, you got to acknowledge it. Some of those people have passed on, unfortunately. But anybody who's responsible for my success at this moment, I acknowledge.
So let's talk about lesson 17, and I promise I won't make you go through each lesson. If our diehards want to read about each lesson, they should definitely get the book.
Mm-hmm.
But lesson 17 is called If I Had But One Wish. And I want to know what your thoughts are. Well, first of all, what's the wish? What is he wishing for?
You want me to read it?
The whole chapter?
No, the wish.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
That I might look just a little beyond the present sphere of human accomplishment and understand the natural forces of the air, sunshine, and darkness. It's part of the wish. What he's looking at, he's making this wish from a 30,000-foot perspective. And he's trying to put a bigger picture into your mind so that you can, in fact, achieve at a higher level once you understand what the greater good is. And while he's very specific about what actions you have to take, he's also exceptionally philosophical about what you have to do with not just respect to the greater good, but the service that you provide and the value that you give to other people and the benefits that you bestow upon them. He's very big on saying if you want to get everything, you got to give everything.
So I thought this was cool when he said, my wish was that I might be blessed with greater knowledge of the human mind, much more knowledge than has yet been discovered or used. He's saying even he needs to improve. And did he not realize how great and how impactful he was?
What he did was rededicate himself to being a lifelong student, even though he was writing his own stuff. And I can tell you that I didn't realize it at the time because I hadn't started with Napoleon Hill. But when I was 20 and I dropped out of college, I went to Europe. But being from Philadelphia, when I got on the plane, I already knew everything. So I was just going to go and kind of get a review. But when I landed, I found out that I literally knew nothing. I couldn't speak the other person's language. I didn't know their history very well. I didn't know where I was going. I was a lost soul in that environment. I was away from my parents for more time than I'd ever been before. That was life changing. And what I did after about my third week, and I was there for almost a year, I dedicated myself to learning something new every day. That was my own personal goal. So when I came across the Napoleon Hill stuff and I saw his, you know, even in Think and Grow Rich, he talks about lifelong learning in a way that is exceptionally important. And later on reinforced by the late, great Jim Rohn or Earl Nightingale, and talking about what it really takes to become a great person. And the answer is you remain a great student. All of the things that you need, if you study being a father, if you want to be a great father, it's not just being about a surgeon. It's about being a neighbor. It's about being a salesperson. It's about being a spouse. It's about being a friend. And all of those things require study. All those things require understanding. And that's what Hill is throwing at me and you and every reader of the book to understand that you have to be a better person at heart.
What is and I think it's the next chapter even, they talk about, or maybe soon after that, he talks about the five-point rule.
The five-point rule is pretty interesting. I'm going to read it. I think it's very important. Success may be had by those who are willing to pay the price. And most of those who crave a $10,000 a year position and $10,000 a year in 1917 is about $250,000 today, especially if they are engaged in business, may realize it if they will pay the price. And the price is eternal vigilance in the development of self-confidence, enthusiasm, working with a chief aim, performing more service than you are paid for, and concentration. With these qualities well developed, you will be sure to succeed. Let's name these qualities the five-point rule. Now, a couple of these have already appeared in other lists of Hill's, and that's why I'm dwelling on the fact that you have to combine these things. Obviously, enthusiasm and self-confidence are characteristics and traits that everybody has to have, but working with a chief aim doesn't say set the goal. What it says is set your compass, set your position, set your life, set your ideals around achieving something that is at the core of your process.
How did you determine your chief aim?
I didn't. It determined me. When I started a salesperson, when I started selling, I go, wow, I love this. I just want to be the best in the world. And when I discovered writing, I go, wow, I love this. I want to be the best writer in the world. And when I discovered speaking, I go, wow, I love this. I want to be the best speaker in the world. So I had three chief aims that were all intertwined with one another. And my aha moment came probably about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning when I was reading The Outliers word for word flying across the country, actually flying overseas. And I read the Malcolm Gladwell formula for 10,000 hours. And I added up my hours and I had 10,000 hours in selling, 10,000 hours in speaking, and 10,000 hours in writing. And I go, I'm ready. Now, it doesn't mean that I had accomplished it. What it meant was that I had reached the level where I could get better. And I had reached the level where I was able to take all the knowledge and the wisdom that I have and clarify it, not just for myself, but for others. And so when this book is published, you'll read the Napoleon Hill part. And 2 months later, you're going to be able to read the Sales Manifesto, which is the maturation of all of my sales wisdom and sales knowledge to be able to go out into the world and, you can own it, you can read it, you can put it into play and make it happen. But that came from 30,000 hours of work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what were the last two? You were going through the list before I asked you about how you found your chief aim.
I got it. Performing more service than you're paid for and concentration.
So performing more service than you're paid for.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big one.
Well, it is and it isn't. In Lesson 22, Hill goes into the principle of service. You will never know the real joy of living until you come into a full understanding of the principle of service. In other words, you lead with serving. You lead by, and there's minor things of serving. You lead by holding the door or holding someone's coat or helping them across the street, some random act of kindness that is really service. And if you have that in your heart, then you do it automatically. And if you don't, you just ignore it. And I grew up in an environment where people ignored it. There's no such thing as service in Philadelphia. There's no such thing as service in New York City in the main. If you see it, it's pretty rare because people will go through a door and just let it slam behind you for the most part. If you walk into an elevator, they're not holding the elevator for you. They're letting it go. And so, and if you're standing on a street corner and it's raining, someone is certain to drive through the puddle that will splash the hell out of you and laugh about it, not be remorseful about it. So that was the environment that I grew up in. And I didn't understand the principle of service literally until I moved to the South.
Wow.
And so for the last 30 years, I've really understood this principle of service because people here actually serve. Then I came across the Chinese principle to serve is to rule. And once I had that and I started to look at other service companies and how they did, the internet has taught us more about service than any other element in our society because they said, we'll protect your credit card, we'll ship it in 2 days, we'll let you return it if you need it. They reek of service. And as a customer, I can talk about their service so that other people can read it. They have to serve memorably. they are, you know, every hotel, every restaurant is vulnerable to somebody writing a TripAdvisor report or a Yelp report about who they are. And this, all of this from Napoleon Hill happened 100 years ago, and he's talking about service.
So I really want to dig into this concept about doing more than what you're paid for, because mm-hmm. I don't think that – and I don't want to stereotype with the younger generation, but I don't think that the people who are newer to the workforce understand this concept in the way that Hill is trying to express it. So, for example, I see a lot of people who arrive at 8:59 or 9 and then leave and then 4:58, they're packing up their stuff.
Okay.
And at 4:50, they're looking at the clock thinking, I get to leave in 10 minutes. So what would you say to them?
You're doomed for mediocrity. That's the best thing I can say to them. If you're not the first in and the last out, you have no idea what you're doing in your life, let alone your job. And for those people that do that, they don't really have a solid understanding. And I'll tell you this, Jen. I don't think it's a generational thing. I think – and I've heard it 1,000 times before the word millennial ever popped up in society. I've heard the phrase, they don't pay me enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And – whether you're answering the phone for somebody, or you're working for an airline, or you're working for a delivery service, or whatever the situation is, you talk to a person and they're pretty much curt. They're pretty much matter of fact. There's not the friendly factor is not there. In fact, when you get a friendly person, you're blown away by it.
Yeah.
And you acknowledge the fact that they're so friendly and so helpful. So I think that it's been a societal issue for a long time, and Hill recognized it 100 years ago. And he said, look, perform service for people, become recognized as a service provider, and you will win. You'll have it in your heart is what he says.
Do you think it's because they haven't fully identified their chief aim, and so they're not – They're showing up to work, but they're not looking at it as a career. They're looking at it as a job.
I agree. 1,000%. If you don't love what you do and you're listening to this podcast, I recommend you quit what you're doing right now and go find another job. Find something that you love to do, and as a result, you will love to serve.
This has been amazing. I am so happy we have gotten to go through the book just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What should people do next?
I think the best thing for them to do is obviously buy the book. If you are still hesitant about what it is, we have a free chapter available, correct? What's the URL for that?
Hillsfirstwritings.com. It'll be in the show notes.
And you can download a chapter and see if it's for you. I believe it will be. I think that you should buy the book and follow my formula, read all the full-page quotes, read the book one time, read the book again to begin to take action, and get a pen or a highlighter. I recommend actually you buy two copies of the book. One you're going to tear apart. You put up on your bathroom mirror, you put some notes around the place to be able to do this or do that. There's so much inspiration in the book that you will not be able to do it all at one time. It will be bite at a time. You're not going to – I've said for years, you don't get great at sales in a day. You get great at sales day by day. It's the same with this book. You have to take it day by day. Take the things that are important to you today, acknowledge them, repeat them until you feel like you've mastered them, and then start on another piece of it.
So I know a lot of our diehards are starting to think about Christmas because it's less than 100 days away. And my recommendation personally, as someone who's read the book and someone who feels, you know, my life has been altered as a result of reading the book and taking action, my recommendation would be to get in touch with Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at 800ceoread.com. That's mm-hmm. his email address.
And buy it for all your friends.
And buy 25 copies and give them out as your Christmas gift this year.
Yeah.
Because this is a gift that will last not just for the period of time that the recipient is reading it. This is a gift that will literally last a lifetime.
And I think that if you look at it from the perspective of it's not just a book, it's a plan, it's a game plan, and it is an easy path for you to follow. There's nothing in here that's you're going to go, oh my gosh, I never saw this before. That's not what this book is about. This book is about how to take advantage of your own power and how to take advantage of your own capability and turn it into positive attitude, success, and money. I want to thank Jen. I want to thank Napoleon Hill. I want to thank the Napoleon Hill Foundation. And I want to thank you, diehards, for going to the show notes right now, clicking on the buy button for Truthful Living. Put it into your library and put it into your life. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I will see you tomorrow on Sell or Die. Get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.